Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Ferrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Ferrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. Roll on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out. The bad seed, the broken day, the bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad taste, bad luck, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Magic City Studios in the Varela Palatial, right across the river and through the woods from where Granny's about to go to bed, but not before she has a little of that orange kush cake in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, to bring to Travis, some kind of fashion check that up should do, but all my friends that come around, fight the party, up rats on the west side, bed bugs up down with a massive tons of tatter brains, splattered all over Manhattan, should do be checking. Hey, what's kicking? I'm Pharrell. Mafia is running it tonight. And I just got done watching the Once Upon a Time in Queens. And the Pirates just won the game walk-off play at the plate to beat the Reds at PNC in Pittsburgh. Fireworks going off in the Steel City as they knock off Cincinnati again. They beat them last night, beat them again tonight. 5-4, the final. And they get it done. The Diamondbacks and Dodgers are starting up at Chavez Ravine right now. We got all that going on. Anyway, we'll keep our eyes on all the games. But I just watched the end of the Once Upon a Time in Queens, the 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets. And I mean to tell you, it was just fantastic. I mean, it might have been the best, honestly, 30 for 30 I've ever seen. I mean, it was just so raw and so real and so crazy and just, it was lunatic fringe. I mean, I can't even believe how cool it was, how in-depth it was, how they interviewed all the players and how it was uncensored. It was raw and dirty. The language was deplorable. Oh, my God. The Yankees just tied that game up in the ninth on a blooper over the shortstop's head that fell in. They took the lead 4-3 in the driving rain at Camden. They were down 3-2 with one out, and now they're up 4-3 on a blooper off the end of the bat that fell in the driving rain at Camden. I mean, that was crazy. They were losing that game. They were in big trouble. Gardner hit it off the end of the bat. Just a little teeny flare. They were playing in, and he hit it over to shortstop's head into left center, and two runs scored, and that's that. They're up 4-3 now on the Orioles. So crazy. I've seen two crazy plays. I've been on for a minute. So anyway, going back to the story, it was so unbelievable. Like, they interviewed all these people, like every one of them, every guy on that team was on this thing, basically all of them. And Dykstra was really funny. I know, obviously, Lenny Dykstra nails has turned into a piece of shack later in life. He is a, you know, absolute felon. The guy's a troublemaker. He has been a thief, a con man. He's bad news. Horrible human being. I mean, that's just all there is to it. But they got him to do this piece, and he was there for one reason and one reason only, to tell it like it is and to talk about the 86 Mets. Not to talk about all of his crimes and misdemeanors, but to just talk about that season. We welcome our radio affiliates, all of them. Sirius, Mightier 1090, Sportsmap, Sports Byline, Armed Forces. It's Pharrell on a bench. So, he was so funny on this show, just and so dirty, so raunchy. And I can't believe, you know, I said this last night on the show that, like, I never anticipated it to be uncensored, right? That it was just raw and dirty and the language flew. I mean, just foul language of the highest order. I couldn't even believe it that I was watching that on ESPN, because I guess I just don't remember ever hearing that on ESPN, on Disney. You know what I mean? But either way, they let it fly. And I mean, it was, you know, pretty appalling, but it was no different than my show on Howard 101 on Sirius XM, which was uncensored. This was uncensored, and it was really intense and cool. But like last night, the 2 hours last night were really good. I mean, really good. And tonight was just even better, because you knew what happened tonight. I mean, that's the funny thing about it. You already know what happens, and it doesn't affect you watching it. You already know they won it. You already know they won the World Series. You already know the ball went through Buckner's legs. You already know everything, and it doesn't hamper or change the fact that the four-part series was kick-ass. I watched it till the bitter end, and it was truly remarkable. Well done. I didn't catch who did it and who directed it and all the rest, but it was absolutely badass. Pharrell on a bench.
There's listening to Sports Grid, then there's listening to Sports Grid. You know you're doing it right when friends ask you about the week's matchups, the wife is happy, and your teenager regards you with quiet awe.
Here's your slippers, Dad.
Keep listening to the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, Pharrell with you. So, you know, I'm watching this thing, and we're going to, I want to talk about it. And then I got a lot to do tonight. We got a guy coming up here in a few minutes in the next segment, Keith Jenkins from the Cincy Inquirer, to talk about Cincinnati and Indiana on Saturday in Bloomington. And there's a lot more going on, obviously, with the Bearcats than just a game against the Hoosiers. So we'll talk to him. And then I want to obviously get into the gymnast today at the Capitol Hill Senate, talking about Larry Nassar. That was crazy. That was absolutely crazy. Blaming the FBI and everything. I mean, it was really good. I watched it all day. So I want to get into all that, but I have to talk about this thing. Now, listen, I said this last night. I'm going to say it again, and I don't care if I repeat myself. You have no idea how much in my life I hated the Mets. I mean, like, you know, when it comes to baseball, there's no team I hate more than the Mets. And as a kid growing up in Pittsburgh, I just, you know, it was just every year, it was the suffering at the hands of the Mets. And in 85, 6, and 7, or 84, 85, and 86, they were, you know, starting to get really good. And then in 86, they won it all. And then in 87 and 88, they were still cocky as ever, even though Cashin had broke up the team and traded away everybody. They still had, like, the, you know, main core guys, but they had lost the biggest pieces. Ray Knight, Kevin Mitchell, Mookie, Wilson. They, you know, Cashin blew the whole thing up like an idiot, without a doubt. But they still had, at that time, like in 87, 88, Hernandez, Carter, all the guys that people remember, Strawberry, Gooden, but Gooden and Strawberry's problems started then. In 87, Gooden was out of baseball with cocaine problems. And then Strawberry started having all his problems. So they both were, you know, blamed at one point or another. They blamed those two, which was, you know, pretty racist at the time. When you think about it, when you look back at it now, it was really unbelievable how Cashin traded Kevin Mitchell to San Diego, and he had nothing to do with booze and drugs. The guy didn't party, but he labeled him problematic, like he was some kind of bad influence on Gooden and Strawberry, which was the furthest thing from the truth. He didn't party. He just looked like a gangster because he had a gold tooth and he was tough. And if anybody messed with anybody on the Mets, they got their ass beat by Kevin Mitchell. That's about the gist of that. So Cashin traded him because, I mean, to me, looking back on it, it was racist. Everything. They blamed Gooden and Strawberry for all the team's problems. Racist. That was racist, as sure as I'm sitting here, because they had a lot more problems than that. You know, really, the problem was in the front office and the ownership. That was the problem. Cashin was a problem. The owners were a problem. And then the Wilpons started getting involved and getting more power, right? That's about the gist of it. But here's what happened. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I hated them. I mean, I used to go watch every single Pirate game. And I had season tickets. My dad had them, and I went every night. I went every game. I went every game. That's what I did. In the summer, I went every night to Three River Stadium. If there was a game, I went. If they were home, I went. If they were on the road, I watched it on TV. I loved it, right? I was an obsessed sports fanatic kid. And I went, and the team I hated more than any other was the Mets. And I mean, they were so good that in that window of 84, 85, and 86, and I'm not even counting 87 and 88, I was already in 87 and 88, 89, 90, I was working in Pittsburgh for CBS. I was already on the air doing radio. I had already been on the air for 5 years in Bloomington, Indiana at IU doing Bob Knight stuff, covering the Hoosiers, DJing overnights, doing sports updates, anchoring, doing everything. And then by the time I got out, I was ahead of my time. So CBS put me in Pittsburgh, and I was the sports director at a CBS radio affiliate at age 23. So I was ahead of my time. And then I guess the rest is history, right? But I was there, and there I was covering the Pirates every day. And I had to go sit there and watch the Mets. And I had to go talk to the Mets. And I had to be around the Mets. And I hated them. I hated them like no other. But, you know, needless to say, it's irrelevant in that when I watch this thing, this 30 for 30, Once Upon a Time in Queens, it's the strangest thing, Mafia. It all went out the window. It just all blew out the window like the confetti that poured down on the Canyon of Heroes when they had the World Series parade. And 2 million people showed up for that. And it was the craziest parade you ever saw in your life in New York. That was the craziest parade they've ever had in New York, bar none. Okay, they've had all the other ones, the Rangers, the Yankees, the Giants, none of them compared to the Mets in 86. And I watched this thing, and I can't even believe that I'm saying this, but on several occasions during, like tonight, they showed the series against the Astros that was the most remarkable 7-game series you ever saw in your life. And the sixth game went 16 innings, right? It was the craziest thing you've ever seen. And then they beat them in seven. And then they went to the World Series, and they were down 2 to Boston, then tied it, and then went down 3-2. And then they were one strike away from losing, and they were down 2 runs. And they won the game, and the ball rolled through Buckner's legs, and they won the game. As I was watching it and reliving all of it, I remembered all of it vividly, because at the time I hated them. And what's more, I hated the Red Sox. I never liked them either, but they were in another league, right? But I was a National League guy. So I was like, screw both these teams. I hate them both. And as a kid, I always liked the Yankees. I just thought they were, you know, I liked George Steinbrenner. I thought they were the bad guys. I thought they were, you know, Reggie Jackson, all that. I mean, you name it, every player ever to play for the Yankees. And Billy Martin, I loved. There was something about him, right? So I never would root for the Red Sox to save your ass. So the Yankees were my American League team. The National League was the Pirates. And to this day, it's the exact same. So here I am watching this thing, and I can't even believe I'm saying this, but I enjoyed watching the Mets win the World Series. I enjoyed it from the perspective of the story and the players talking about it, all of them, Darling, Hernandez, Carter, Ojeda, you know, Sid Fernandez, Strawberry, Gooden, Dykstra, Mitchell, they were all on it. Ray Knight, endlessly, every player was on it. And they just kept telling the story and telling the story and telling the story. Davey Johnson's all over it, telling the story, telling the story, telling the story. And as this thing evolved and they won that series against the Astros and then got to the World Series and came back from two down and then won that thing. I mean, I was sitting there watching it like it had never happened before. And I was actually cheering for them as I watched it. It was crazy. They were going through the motions. They were lifeless.
I don't like that or condone that at all.
I play it straight up, yo.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. And Keith Jenkins is with the Great Inquirer in Cincy in the Queen City. We thought we'd bring him on to talk about a lot of stuff with the Bearcats and their coach and their game with Indiana on Saturday, which is really a good game when it boils down to it. Keith, good to have you on the show. First of all, let me start with I want to spend some time talking about Luke Fickell. And I want to go back to his buddy, Mike Bone, who – you know, I was talking to Jerry Palm the other day from CBS. I go way back with Jerry. I worked at CBS forever. And we were talking about Luke Fickell, you know, bottom line, being offered that UFC job at some point out in, you know, Southern California because of his connection to Bone. I think everything in sports ties together with, you know, at some level, who you know. And who are you friendly with? Who are your connections? Where's your juice coming from? And obviously, this guy has connections with Bieniemy as well from his days at Colorado. And he was a kid that I think was born, or at least when he was a little kid, he lived in Boulder. But he ended up going to Kansas, I think, to be a two-sport athlete, and then ends up at some point or another in Cincinnati in the mid, you know, like around – what, 20, was it, am I crazy? Like the years that he was there, I just it was 2014. So he was there and he had a nice run there. And then that's his boy. Do you think that he wants to steal him from Cincinnati and be the next coach at USC? Or do you feel like Bieniemy is the guy because of his ties to Boulder? It seems to me like it's got to be one of them.
Sure. I mean, the connection's obvious. You know, Bone hired Fickell here, and he's proven to be, you know, one of the best decisions that Mike Bone ever made. You know, the verdict wasn't too clear yet on if Luke Fickell could be a great head coach. He had a stint as an interim head coach at Ohio State. Of course, when Jim Tressel resigned, that didn't go too well. And Mike Bone took a flyer on Luke Fickell, brought him to Cincinnati. They had a rough year that first year, 4 wins in that first year, But Luke turned it around and really performed well, and obviously has performed well since then, recruited well, turned this program around. It was not in the best of shape when he got it from Tubby Tuberville. But, yeah, the connection's obvious. I think the best way to answer that question is it's not so much if Mike Bone wants him, does Luke Fickell want USC? And from all accounts and from what Luke told us on Tuesday, he's good here. I think it's important to understand the type of guy that Luke is. And I understand the caliber and the history of USC and the top-notch, you know, alumni that they have out there, the resources, the money, all that great stuff. But Luke Fickell is an Ohio guy, born and raised, and he's happy here, man. He really, truly loves the fact that he's been able to build this program from the ground up. All the guys that are in this program are his guys. The culture, the family atmosphere that he's been able to build. Family is a big part of who Luke is. He's got six kids, he and his wife. And they've been able to build this thing on the grounds of, like, doing something different, convincing guys who've got Power 5 offers, yeah, you can go here or there, but you can come to Cincinnati and do something different. So he likes the stability that he has here. He obviously loves the future with the Big 12 on the horizon and the money and the resources that that will bring. So from all accounts, at least right now, it seems that Luke Fickell is happy here. He's enjoying what's happening and what he's building here at this university. And he even said, you know, if the phone rings, I'm not answering it. I'm good over here. So, of course, we'll see what happens. But I think right now, it's safe to say that Luke Fickell's not going anywhere.
Now, listen, I'm with you. I believe you. I'm down with that. I'm, like, cool with that. I think it sounds like a perfect storybook tale. And I think that he's clearly everything you say he is. I know he's an Ohio guy. I know he's got the giant, you know, Brady Bunch family. I get all that. That's fine. I'm with you. I'm totally in agreement. But, you know, I don't think Brian Kelly was an Ohio guy or any of that. I, you know, when Notre Dame called, he was out the door in 5 minutes. But you're telling me that if USC and Mike Bone offers him $10 million to coach at USC, because that's about what it's going to take. I mean, you're talking about guys making $10 million now to coach big time programs. If they offered him $8, $9 million, obviously you're going to tell me money doesn't matter to him. He's making $3.5 million now. You're going to tell me that he wouldn't answer Mike Bone's phone call at USC? Like his old boy at Cincinnati, not going to answer the phone. I just don't believe that.
No, I mean, heck, if someone offered me $10 million, I'd at least take the phone call, right? So I'm not saying that he wouldn't. I'm not saying that he wouldn't at least entertain it. I'm just trying to give you a little insight into who this guy is. And look,
right,
his wife, Amy, is a big part of this decision. You know, she's a big part of what happens in that family. And if mama's happy, hey, that's what it is. And she loves it here. The family's happy here. I don't want to speak in like definites that he's not, but you know, and we've seen it happen before. We've seen coaches say, look, I'm not going anywhere. And then they're on the next plane out. But I think it's a unique situation in that the circumstances, look, man, he's in a good spot where the pressure's not on him. He's not at an Ohio State. He's not at a USC. He's not at a Texas. He's not at Oklahoma where the pressure to win is insane, right? He gets to USC. Sure, that $10 million check looks great, but the pressure on him to win is going to be enormous. You want to deal with that? A Ohio guy who's not from L.A., who doesn't know what that life is all about, who's not familiar with the recruiting trails out there on the West Coast, who's enriched in the Midwest and has done this recruiting in this area his entire career. I'm not saying he won't go out there. I'm just saying, does the move make the most sense for his career? And if the paycheck is what he's looking for, that money's coming. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next week. But when that Big 12 money comes around, that $3.4 million will balloon to a lot much more than that in a little bit. So, you know, we'll see what happens, man. They got a lot at stake in this season. So we'll see if they can get through this thing and accomplish the things that they weren't able to accomplish last season. But, I mean, if you're asking me my opinion, man, I really truly believe that Luke is happy. He's enjoying his time here at Cincinnati. And he always talks about his goal is just to build the program, and he's been able to do that. And as long as there's room to grow, I think he's going to be motivated to continue to do just that.
Well, I, you know, maybe his isn't his kid going to play at Cincinnati, the kid out of Moeller?
His oldest son is a freshman offensive lineman at Cincinnati, yep.
He's there now, so maybe he just wants to be there for that. And you know, I can dig it. If that's what he wants, then have at it. Do you believe, you know, obviously he was at Ohio State and his wife was at Ohio State. And what kind of taste did that leave in his mouth, what happened to him there? Because, I think he's a great coach, right? So I respect what he's doing at Cincinnati. I've been there. I've been to games there. I've been to the campus. I partied on the campus. When I was in college at Indiana, I went to Cincinnati and partied a few times. Great spot. Great school. It's cool. But it's not Ohio State. And let's just take me to what he – like, what does he say about – and respectfully, I have about 90 seconds, then we'll come back and talk more about it. But for, like, 90 seconds, tell me what it was like when he left there and came to Cincinnati. What was the taste like in his mouth after what happened?
Sure. So I talked to Luke actually in depth about that – when was that, June? And you know, I asked him the first time that they played at Ohio State when he was the head coach at Cincinnati, they played them at the Horseshoe in Columbus, and Columbus blew the doors off of them. And I asked him, you know, how much did that sting? You know, I know you don't want to look at it selfishly as the head coach, but he was like, look, I'm not going to lie to you. That hurt. You know, I wanted to win that game, but it wasn't so much about me. It was about the guys. But he talked about it was tough, and he didn't know after that brief stint at Ohio State as the head coach, the interim head coach, if he wanted to continue to do this thing. I mean, he admitted that. He wasn't sure if the head coach was something that he wanted to pursue. But when the opportunity came up, he really wanted a second crack at it. But I think what it did for him is it helped him understand what his weaknesses are. You know, okay, these are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. This is what I do well. This is where I come up short a little bit. So what I need to do is make sure I build a quality staff around me that can compensate for my shortcomings, right? He knows his strengths. He knows his weaknesses. I think that was a big part of that learning experience at Ohio State as the interim head coach. And he sees that. He's built an outstanding staff since he's been here. His longtime defensive coordinator is now the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame.
Hold that thought right there, Keith. Just to hold on, respectfully, I hate to cut you off. I got a break. We'll come back and finish this story, and then I want to talk about what he's doing there now with this team the last couple of years and the success they're having. It's Ferrell on the Bench.
Every day, sports happens.
It never stops.
And neither do we. Get the expert perspectives you need, strategies and vital information you won't get anywhere else. You're listening to the home of the Winning Edge. This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
We're on the Bench. We're talking to Keith Jenkins of the Cincy Inquirer. You were talking about his defensive coordinator when I rudely cut you off to go to break. Can you pick it up right around there?
No doubt. And it's all good, man. We got bills to pay. I get it.
I'm in.
Look, man. Yeah, like it's he's built a quality staff around him since he's been here to compensate for his shortcomings. A good example of that is Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman was a young black guy, former professional, a guy that he's known since Marcus was, you know, 16, 17 years old because he coached him at Ohio State. He helped recruit him to Ohio State. But what Marcus was able to do was go into the inner city and get some of these guys and be more relatable to some of these guys. And maybe that's not quite Luke Strong's pursuit, right? But Marcus was able to do that. Well, Marcus, who is also a heck of a defensive coordinator, is now at Notre Dame. But that's just one example of some of the assistance that he has had on his staff to build a quality program. And Luke has done a great job of, like, focusing on the 300-mile radius he likes to focus on. It's the 300 miles going all around the Cincinnati. So if you're in the greater Cincinnati area, if you're in northern Kentucky, if you're in Indiana, if you're in Ohio but you've slipped under the radar of Ohio State, or, you know, Michigan State's not looking at you, or Michigan or whatever, come to Cincinnati. You know, be different. Come to Cincinnati. Everything that you want to accomplish, you can do it at the University of Cincinnati. He's done a really good job of pushing that and pushing the people and not so much the facilities. And so he's built a real family quality atmosphere at the University of Cincinnati, man, and it's paid off. And it's paid off in great dividends over these last, you know, 4 years. And, you know, this year is set to be something special, and we'll see how it shakes out.
I got to tell you, listen, you know, I don't think he got really a fair crack at it in Columbus, and I didn't think he got to show what he was made of. And then he went to the Queen City, and he has just been phenomenal. I think the guy's been a rock star, and this is everything that people now thought that he would be, even though he never really got a legitimate shot. I thought that he was doomed there from the minute it started. You knew it would end and that they would go a different direction. Meanwhile, this guy goes down the street and picks up at Cincinnati. And I think the job he's done is just sickening. And, you know, last year they were a really good football team, right? And they don't get any respect because they're not big enough. And then he turns right around this year and they're, you know, off and running again. And they're highly ranked. They still, in my opinion, get shafted when it comes to being one of the, you know, they're number seven, whatever the hell they rank them. I think those rankings are just stupid to begin with. Every week, the five or six favorites in college football get all the juice. Even if Clemson loses, they never drop but a couple spots, because college football is so rigged for the powerful. But a team like Cincinnati, kind of, Keith, they're that team that's just there. Just, you can't get rid of them. They're just waiting to pounce on an opportunity to be one of the biggest and most talked about schools that no one thought could do it. They have that potential, and I think it's because of that guy. I mean, they are right there on the doorstep of knocking in and, you know, plowing through the door like they're on a cop raid, and they're going to take over. I mean, they are right there, and they've been there before sniffing around with Kelly. But this team's even better than those teams.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, I've been in and around this program my entire life. My dad played here. I was recruited to play there. Rick Minner recruited me, for God's sake, to age me, and you can figure out how old I am.
I remember him.
I've never seen a Cincinnati football team this talented. Brian Kelly didn't have it. Now, he had dudes on that team, don't get me wrong, but he didn't have a team that is this deep. This team is deep 2-3 per position. I mean, it's amazing what Luke has done as far as development. I mean, you look at the key players on this team. We can start with Desmond Ridder. Desmond was a quarterback from Louisville who not a lot of teams wanted. He was a tall, skinny, lanky kid. Good athlete, of course, but he wasn't a great quarterback yet. Tommy Tuberville took a shot at him. Zach Taylor, who's now the head coach at the Bengals, brought him in. And when they were let go, Luke comes in and he's like, he saw something special in Dez. He's like, yo, we're going to honor your scholarship. Dez balled out on the scout team, right? And then won the job as a redshirt freshman. And it's been a great quarterback for them since then. But developing Dez and keeping his confidence where it needs to be, making sure that his head is right, making sure that he's focused on, you know, becoming the best passer that he can be. Dez has worked a lot over the offseason with Jordan Palmer, who's, you know, the renowned quarterback trainer, the brother of Carson Palmer. Dez was a true running quarterback probably before this season. He hasn't run a whole lot yet this year. I mean, his first throw of the season was an 81-yard bomb that was dropped into a bucket, and that was the biggest knock on Desmond is his accuracy, his consistency as a passer. That's no longer an issue, and that's why he's on some draft boards as a first-round pick. You look at Ahmad Sauce-Gardner, who was the corner, and he's the number one corner on a lot of boards. It's either him or the kid from LSU. This was a guy from Detroit who didn't get a lot of offers, right? But Luke saw something special in him, brought him in, and developed him into one of the top players in college football. Myjai Sanders, another one, another guy who went under the radar. Not your five-star, four-star caliber athlete, but he's developed into one of the top edge rushers in the country. So what Luke is doing is developing these guys and giving them the confidence to play great and to believe that they can play with anybody. And we saw at the Peach Bowl, they went head and shoulders with and toe-to-toe with Georgia and should have beat them, right? They should have beaten them in Atlanta. But this isn't – I think it's important that fans understand, you know, this isn't just some group of five program that's playing over its head. They got dudes on this team. They got legit dudes. Jerome Ford, their running back, was at Alabama two seasons ago. Blue Smith was one of their, you know, young wide receivers. He's an Ohio State transfer. I mean, they got guys who can flat out ball. And Luke has been able to give these guys the confidence, the opportunity to play top-notch ball. And now that they're going to a Power 5 conference, man, the sky's the limit. So what he's doing at this school is pretty impressive, and it has not been done by anyone previously.
So they lost that game to Georgia, I think, by 3, if I remember correctly. But they had a great season. I think they won every conference game. I think they lost once, but that was it. And here they are again, out of the gates, winning. You know, they've kicked Miami their ass. They kicked Murray State's ass, and now they go to Bloomington to take on Indiana. Now, we all know Indiana was ranked at the beginning of the season, and they got smoked in Iowa City. And last year in the COVID year, they had a great run, and Allen got on the cover of SI, and everybody wants to play for him at Indiana, and that Indiana sucked forever. I went to Indiana. I went to IU, right? So I was a basketball guy. I was a Bob Knight guy. I was there in 87 when Alford and that team beat Syracuse to win the national championship. But when I was there, Bill Mallory was there, and he was the best thing they'd had there in forever, and they still sucked. And now they're good again. But then they lose to Iowa. They fall out of the top 25. And now here comes Cincinnati, who I think is smoking hot, tough team that I think they obviously they can beat Indiana. I think they can beat them. The question is, Keith, do you think they will? Because Indiana, when they lost that game to Iowa, they kind of lost all their juice. I mean, they just went from being somebody to being homeless in 5 minutes, right? Now, if they don't beat Cincinnati, I mean, they're going to be Skid Row. They have to beat Cincinnati to get their, whatever you want to call it, moxie, whatever the hell you want to call it back. Would you agree with that? This game means more to Indiana than it does Cincinnati. To me, it's another victim for Cincinnati. But if Indiana can beat them, they can get their foot back into the party.
Well, I'd make the argument that it's an even bigger game for Cincinnati, because if they lose this game, everything's off, right? Like, all of the things that they want to accomplish, if the college football playoff is going to happen, if they're going to crack that top four, if they're going to be viewed as one of the quote-unquote group of five schools that can play with the big boys, if they can do that consistently, did the Big 12 make the right decision? Or should they have gotten another school? Is this, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da? This is a huge game for Cincinnati. They've been talking about this game since, gosh, the spring. It's this stretch that they have coming up. It's Indiana. There's a bye week. Then they go at Notre Dame. Then they have Temple at home, which should be a win, of course. But then you got UCF, which is a tough matchup in conference. So this is a stretch here that's going to define their season and going to define, you know, what's at stake and if they're able to attain those things. This is a big matchup. I mean, these two teams, coincidentally, like, they're so close, but they haven't played much in their history. I think the last time they played was 2000. Sure, it's a big game for Indiana as well. which team is going to show up, which quarterback is going to show up for them. Penix, I think, is a phenomenal athlete. Of course, he had a torn ACL a season ago. We've seen two different Penixes in these first two games.
You're right.
But I just think that what's at stake for this game is everything that Cincinnati is out to prove, that they are legit, that they aren't just a team that is getting all this talk and that you and me are talking about for no reason. If they can go into Bloomington and play with a Big Ten team, and they, look, these two teams fight over the same players. This is going to be a highly tested matchup on Saturday because these teams really don't like each other. These coaching staffs see each other on the recruiting trail and are fighting around over the same guys. There'll be a lot of Cincinnati fans in that stadium as well, so it'll be a great environment. And this will be the first true road game for Cincinnati in, what, 2 years? Last year, they didn't really have any true road games because there was 2,000 fans in the stands, right? So this is their first time truly facing a hostile road environment with 50, 60,000 screaming fans. How will they respond to that? This will be a huge test for them in this growth and this development as a top-tier program, which is what they want to be.
Yeah, I think Ritter's playing way better than Penix. Penix doesn't look like the same guy that, you know, beat Penn State, that was slinging it all over the field, and obviously blew out his knee, so he had to have that fixed. I think Cincinnati's a better football team. I actually think Indiana, has to win this game. I think they have potential to knock them off. I think Cincinnati's better. I think they're ranked because of a reason, and I think people have noticed what they're doing. I think it should be a great game. Hey, bro, I love chatting with you. We'll catch up again throughout the season. They play Notre Dame next week. You got a brutal two-week stretch. Let's catch up again down the road. We'll get you on the TV show next time. Thanks for coming on the bench tonight, bro.
My man, I appreciate it.
All right, Keith Jenkins, the great writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer, getting ready for Cincinnati and Indiana and Bloomington on Saturday. Should be a great game. Good catching up with him. We'll get him on the Coast to Coast TV side next time. Problem with people. Everybody expects every team in the effing league to win the Super Bowl. One team wins. The rest of them lose.
Nothing for you.
How about that? One last indignity.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. So the Dodgers are up on Arizona 1-0 in the third. I'll give you an idea of everything that's going on. Rockies and Braves are 2-2 in the ninth. In Atlanta, late night, and then Astros up 7-1 of the Rangers at Globe Life in the ninth. Angels lead the White Sox 3-2, bottom eight in Chicago. A's in Kansas City up 9-5, top seven, 2-1, one out. Padres jumped out on the Giants tonight at Oracle in San Francisco. It's 5-1 San Diego, top of the third. The Giants are finally on the board. So, I mean, San Diego literally has been so awful over the last month, whatever, that in my view, they can't even afford to lose a game, let alone, are they going to choke or this or that? Choke? I mean, they're not even like a factor anymore, are they, the way they've played? I mean, I know they're right there in the wild card. I know they're in it. I know they have a shot. But we already know that the Cardinals took over that spot. We know what the Reds have been doing. I mean, the Padres are lucky they're even in the conversation with the pitching that they've had and with the lack of hitting and the problems they've had over the last month. I mean, I seriously thought they were going to lose all four games in San Francisco or whatever the hell it is. I think they're playing again tomorrow. So they lost to them the last two. I figured they'd lose tonight, lose tomorrow. I mean, they've been getting their ass beat. So I can't believe they're up 5-1 right now. You talk about a team that needs a win. They need to close the deal on that. We got a lot more going on here. I want to talk more about the Mets. I want to talk about the gymnasts. It's Pharrell on the bench.
step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.